Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on economic meltdown coming right after this. You know, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce. The government gets the other 60%. Now, that's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? And if you think your share isn't enough, then why don't you work twice as hard and then produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year. And you're going to net about 25%, and the government will net 75%, which means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you'll net $4,000 more. That's about 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year, guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. That's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net about 25%. Why don't you call and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much and receive so little. Let me teach you how to do just that in my Tax and Status School, which is now available on compact disc for adult home study. Now, to order your free general law CD package, just call direct. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine. Send an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, our Tax and Status School is also available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. Why don't you call right now before you forget? That's 417-273-4967. We haven't talked about economics for a while, so I thought I'd pull out the International Forecaster. I just received it here a couple of days ago, and run through some of the major topics that are going on around the world in economics. If you don't subscribe to one of the newsletters, you ought to. I'll give you some names and addresses and some newsletters that are free of charge. You can get them off of the web at Kitco. You can subscribe. I subscribe to a number of these newsletters so that I can keep abreast of what's going on in the underground press. We have the lapdog press, CBS, ABC, and NBC. And they tell us what we're supposed to know, and you should be fully tuned to what you are supposed to know. Jesus of Nazareth made that observation in Matthew chapter 24 when he said we ought to be watching world events. Watching world events gives us an edge on the coming tribulation and the meltdown of the world's economic and social structure. The difference between living and dying, which the Committee of 300 now has described as being their goal to reduce Earth's population by 90%, it just so happens that that coincides with the biblical prophecy that about one-tenth of mankind will be left alive when the Messiah returns. So you have both of these authorities, one, the Bible and God, and two, the Committee of 300, supported by such think tanks, you know, as the Club of Rome, the Bilderbergers, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations. If you take a look at what these people are advocating, they're advocating the same thing that God said he's going to bring to pass. Now, if you don't know anything about it, one way or the other, you could get caught kind of off guard, like the prophecy or the parable, I should say, of the 10 virgins in Matthew chapter 24, where five of them are ready and they've got lamps and they've got oil and they're prepared for the coming of the bridegroom, and five of them don't have any oil. They've got lamps, but they don't have any oil. And so when the bridegroom comes, there's this great shock, and so the five that don't have any oil rush over to the five that do and they say, hey, give us some of your oil. And the five that have the oil say, no, I don't think we want to do that, because, you see, if we give you our oil, then we won't have any. And if we give you half of our oil, then we'll only have half enough. None of us will have enough. So we're going to practice triage here, and we'll keep what we've got. We've prepared for it. You had your opportunity to prepare, and you should have been prepared, but you're not. And that's not my fault. That's not our fault. That's your fault, and you'll have to live with the consequences. So when we talk about economic meltdown coming, there are consequences that derive from the licentious economic practices that we here in the United States and indeed the people around the world have been practicing over the last 100 years. There's a day of reckoning coming. So in the International Forecaster this week, we start off with, we have come a long way from the freedom that existed in America back in the 19th century. Our freedoms and our privacies have been snatched from us one by one. And as we have traversed the past 100 years, since the First World War, we have lived in perpetual war, perpetual revolution and crisis that have been deliberately made to order for us. We are now told that we could leave all of this behind if the world was democratized and free trade and globalization were allowed free rein. It'll solve all of our problems. That's what they're telling us. Now, privacy is based upon respect for private property and law, which protects that right. Now, the recent Supreme Court decision allowing eminent domain for commercial purposes effectively ended all of that. Government now, for any reason, can take your property. The wealthy and the connected can now have what is yours. They have taken part of your privacy and freedom away from you. And over the last century, the promise of perpetual peace has been deliberately replaced by perpetual war and revolution for perpetual peace. And today we have laws for laws. We have a totally fiat commercial, economic, and financial system that simply no longer works. The system will end when other central governments simply can no longer afford to purchase our debt. Gold is the only true money, but we do not expect it to be accepted as that. We have a totally immoral government, which is only legitimate because the law says that it's legitimate. The laws were written to create a condition in which government can do exactly as instructed by those who control it from behind the scenes. That's the Committee of 300. As a result of such laws, we have become slaves or bond servants or serfs of the state, and we are being denied our right to our personal property as we're taxed into oblivion. Part of everything that we produce goes to government, whether we like it or not. And if you do not pay your tribute to Caesar, then taxes, or who taxes your private property, then your private property will be confiscated and taken away from you. Your private property is taken from you by law. This brings about the question of legitimacy of government. All that has changed is that your master doesn't directly control you. He indirectly controls you by way of taxes and laws that make you subservient to the state. There is no life, there is no liberty, and there is no pursuit of happiness when you live in a police state, as Americans now do. In this bogus pursuit of terrorism, all of our freedoms have now been removed, and unless we stop this insidious process now, we'll live forever in change or in revolution. Our economy and the world economy are out of control, and that's the main reason that gold is going higher day by day. It's the only real currency. It's the only real money in all of man's history. And as we mentioned last week, the word in Geneva and Zurich is that the dollar will fall in value by 50% during the coming devaluation. The only question now is, when is this devaluation coming? In reading this publication, you're all well aware of the real reasons for this calamity. Worse yet, in the conventional sense, there's no way back. We passed that point of no return 5 years ago. Our economy continues to amass higher external deficits that are totally unpayable. The foreign central bankers are all well aware of this, but they're all in varying degrees a part of a great worldwide game, which is the deliberate destruction of the world's economy from which they expect to build their new world order. Confidence is beginning to ebb as those running nations begin to realize the enormous ramification of about what is to occur. These nations are going to be left holding the bag, and no one likes to be the goat left holding the bag. The legitimacy of the dollar, the U.S. economy, and of the U.S. government, it's all about to collapse. This quagmire that we call Iraq and Afghanistan continues unabated in its loss of money and lives. Congress will approve another $120 billion request, and Mr. Bush's $40 billion war, which is the price that we were told this war was going to cost, has now become a $440 billion war and occupation with no end in sight. Furthermore, the United States is in the process of building four large air bases around Baghdad, which can only lead to the conclusion that America plans to be in Iraq for a long, long time, perhaps decades to come. It will be a perpetual financial drain on our economy. And then there is a $600 million embassy complex being built in Baghdad's Green Zone. We're sure that it's not there for temporary occupancy. Representative Jack Murtha has been saying for some time that Iraq is not about terrorism. It is about civil war. The bloody events as of late have proven his assessment to be true, accurate, and correct. Jack is unusual for a politician. He's a truth seeker and a truth teller. Jack Murtha has been giving us the facts. He's been giving us the truth. It's just not very palatable. The flip side of that is that George and the administration know for sure that they have brought democracy to Iraq. Now, democracy, like terrorism, is a cover for all of the other real reasons that were there. Even Jack Murtha doesn't get that because he's inside the box. He's inside the beltway. America is now in the midst of a civil war in Iraq, and our military is stuck right in the middle of that civil war. The civil war is the result of rigging Iraq's democratic actions. Now, the Association of Muslim Scholars, which is a hard-line Sunni group, has blamed America for worsening conditions in Iraq, and they're probably about right. Hundreds of thousands of Muslims across the country are chanting no to the occupation, and they're probably about right about that also. This has made us less safe here in America because it will motivate Muslims to retaliate against us in the United States, and they have every right to do so. How would you feel if you were an Iraqi and your country and your people were being torn apart and you had done nothing wrong? Our troops are in a crossfire, and we have helped recruit even more Islamic combatants as a result. History resonates with the enmity and the violence between Muslim sects. And our American youth are losing their lives and their limbs trying to sort out these centuries-old ancient hatreds among the Muslim factions. Many politicians in both parties want out of Iraq and Afghanistan, but they're afraid of bringing up the issue because 45% of Americans are still convinced that being in Iraq is a good idea. Now, the Chinese are not much for words, and so when they say something, we ought to listen. The Chinese have now told us that they plan to cut back their foreign dollar reserves by 50%, and they plan to do it very soon. But over a period of time, in order to increase the value of the yuan, if you had $820 billion in your foreign reserve account, you'd probably want to diversify some of your holdings. It's an event that has to happen, and once it begins to happen, it will become unstoppable. And that's just one of the key reasons that the dollar's value has to go substantially lower. And we also want to remind you again that Syria is exchanging most of their dollar reserves for euros and other currencies that they need in trade. In addition, as we told you last week, Norway wants to own oil, or wants its own oil burse or brokerage house to trade oil in oil-denominated euros, not in oil-denominated dollars. The world is starting to move in that direction, from dollars to euros to yen to other currencies, and the trend will become unstoppable, especially if the Iranian oil burst opens as scheduled on March 16, 2006. What is tragic is that Americans do not know any of this because the media has kept them in the dark. Now, for all intents and purposes, we do not have a constitution left. This revised Patriot Act, just enacted by Congress, is being fast-tracked now for approval. And this shows you how totally corrupt our Congress has become. This Patriot Act places all Americans in the position of legally being spied upon based upon the whims of the government and government agents. Citizens now are finally realizing that the law is terrorist in nature, and in fact the terrorists are within our government. There's no longer use for probable cause. It is any cause that government agents want it to be. Permanent passage now of the Patriot Act deflects attention to a bogus enemy that doesn't even exist, and it puts us in jeopardy for merely questioning government. And it allows our criminal government to keep their cover by preying on those who dissent. Now, the Iranians say that if they're attacked, they will retaliate with a military strike on Israel's main nuclear facility at Dimona, the port city of Haifa, and the Zakaria area. And our guess is you won't see sanctions against Iran. The bluff of the United States and Israel is being called by the Iranians. We'll have to see how that one comes out. The Army has recommended that 7 82nd Airborne Division paratroopers be discharged following allegations that they engaged in sex acts shown on gay pornographic websites, and they face court-martial on charges of sodomy, pandering, and engaging in sex acts for money. I got to pause here for a moment and make an observation concerning this, because if, 40 or 50 years ago, you had even mentioned that there were gays in the Army, we would have looked at you like you're some kind of a nut. Bill Clinton, remember, said we need to have a policy of don't ask, don't tell. The military commanders and leaders said, you know, we can't have sodomites in the Army. It isn't going to work. Politicians said, oh, yeah, it'll work. Watch this. So you have it. I just want to point out that Edward Gibbon, back in the 18th century, I think it was about 1776, as I recall, about the same time we filed our Declaration of Independence, wrote a book called The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. He listed five causes for their decline and fall, and moral degradation was one of the causes that he thought was a cause of their decline and eventual destruction. So keep in mind that the moral degradation that you see going on in the West, not just in the United States, it also occurs in the Israelite countries of Western Europe, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. But I think that we Americans have a special role being the number one superpower in the world. That's first. And then the moral degradation of the number one leader in the world's leading nation, as an example for all of the Muslim world and all of the black African world and the Asiatic world to follow as a role model. I think they look at us and want to puke. Now, the White House has finally turned over 250 pages of emails that they said they didn't have. Kind of sounds like the Clintons, doesn't it? These emails came from Vice President Dick Cheney's office. From 2003, they relate to the leak of the cover of CIA operative Valerie Plame Wilson. These emails are said to be explosive, and they may prove that Dick Cheney was the ultimate mastermind of the caper. And remember, Scooter Libby now has been indicted, you know, for lying about his role in that Plame affair. It's expected that these emails will prove Cheney lied to FBI investigators, and some of the emails turned over to Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald gave up Plame Wilson's identity and CIA status. And in a new incursion against freedom of the press, the Securities and Exchange Commission issued a subpoena to two journalists at Dow Jones and ordered them to provide information about conversations that they had with stock traders and analysts. Then, for some reason, the Securities and Exchange Commission backed off, but they may return. And what the Securities and Exchange Commission was looking for was unpublished communications. If the SEC can access these communications, then the tools of every business reporter in this country becomes fair game for any company that doesn't like scrutiny and chooses to play the conspiracy card. On the other hand, many brokerage firms, especially the major brokerages, have been going naked short, and the Securities and Exchange Commission is well aware of it, and they have done absolutely nothing about it. They have stopped trading in thousands of little companies with no explanation, and they never trade again, and the shareholders lose all of their money. That doesn't seem to bother the SEC, though. Very often, they simply destroy companies with no explanation. But the big multinational corporations aren't destroyed. In fact, none of their chief executive officers or boards of directors ever go to jail. They pay their fines, which is just another tax. Now, we can have a government that has been forced to admit that is tapping our telephones, faxes, emails, opening our mail, and accusing and accessing our bank and medical records. None of these acts against us has to be covered by a warrant or any probable cause. And we're now being told that we should not be concerned about this because our civil and personal liberties are gone, because we must all fight terrorism, and anyone can be a terrorist. Now, of course, Dubai Ports and the United Arab Emirates can run 21 ports because they, of course, are our friends. And they are part of this new world order. Have you been listening to and watching now in the mainstream press this story concerning the Dubai? Dubai, it's a little country over on the Arabian Peninsula. And there's a big flap going on right now concerning they're taking over six ports here in the United States. You know, if 50 years ago you had said that France or a French company was going to come in and take over and operate six American ports, I think you'd have had a change in administrations in the next election. It was something that would just shock people's pants right off of them. Today, it hardly causes a ripple, although most Americans, are, when they're polled, are opposed to it. Now, I said a French company or an English company. Now, here's the president of the United States says, you know, we're at war with the Arab world. Not Muslims now, but the Arab world, over this terrorism. And if you'll remember now that it's the Arab Muslims, not other Muslims, I'm just talking about the Arab Muslims that knocked down the trade towers and have been the main source of terrorism. You know, Osama bin Laden is from Saudi Arabia. So to turn over six of our ports to be operated by an Arab company does sound a little on the preposterous side. Can you imagine during World War II, for instance, turning over six American ports to a German company? Shucks, instead of a German company, how about turning them over to a Norwegian company? You know, after all, they're Norwegians. Just the fact that the Germans have conquered and occupied Norway isn't any reason why. What if we'd have turned them over to a Danish company during World War II? Would that make much sense to you? I mean, you could argue, well, they're not German. And the Danes are adamantly anti-German, and the Norwegians are adamantly anti-German. I mean, you could say, listen, the Dubai government is definitely anti-terrorism. Maybe they're anti-Osama bin Laden. But hey, aren't they all Muslim? And I'll just bet you that Muslim theology, like blood, flows a lot deeper than stocks traded on a stock exchange. I just thought I'd share that with you. Now, back during the days of Justice Douglas back in the 60s. A case came up called Laird versus Tatum that had something to say about this thing of spying and about the War Powers Act during World War One and so on. And Justice Douglas of the Supreme Court had this to say. He said, Army intelligence has, without notice to its civilian superiors, overstepped its mission. From 1917 to 1924, the Corps of Intelligence Police maintained a massive surveillance of civilian political activity, which involved the use of hundreds of civilian informants, the infiltration of civilian organizations, and the seizure of dissenters and unionists, sometimes without charges. That activity was opposed, then as now, by civilian officials on those occasions when they found out about it. But it continued unabated until post-war disarmament and economies finally eliminated the bureaucracy that conducted it. This cancer is a cancer in our body politic. It is a measure of the disease which afflicts us. Army surveillance, like army regimentation, is at war with the principles of the First Amendment. Those who already walk submissively will say that there is no cause for alarm. But submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. The Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people, and the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and of expression of the press, of political and social activities, free from government surveillance. So, boys and girls, what we see today going on in the guise or under the guise of the Patriot Act and Homeland Security has been done in this country in World War One, in World War Two, to a lesser degree in Vietnam, and is now being done in this phony war against terrorism. Well, I got to give you a reminder here, so hang on. We'll be back with more on the economic meltdown coming right after this. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Now, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are, in fact, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint is not necessarily wholly endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about economic meltdown. Every once in a while I get a letter and they'll tell me that economic meltdown can't happen in America because the government won't allow it. Well, I can assure you that the government is doing everything in their power to prevent it. In fact, this month they're going to take another step, and they're going to stop publishing the M3 money supply. We have a thing called the Plunge Protection Team. We have the intervening of government into the stock market and into the gold markets to manipulate those markets to keep the economy from collapsing. George Bush and the administration, the Republicans and Democrats, working together, have been for nearly 100 years and are now doing everything in their power to hold the world economy together, primarily the American economy, which translates into the world economy, because when our economy collapses, the entire world's economy will collapse with it. Although Bob Chapman here is pointing out that probably this is a designed collapse for the express purpose of merging us all into this New World Order, as I call it, the New World Order nightmare. Because we're at the juncture now when this New World Order comes to power. It's going to come to power for a very short period of time. Let me give you a citation. In Revelation, chapter 17, verse 12, there is a mention of the New World Order. Here's what it says. It says that the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. And these have one mind, and they shall give their power and their strength unto the beast. And these shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, because he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called faithful and chosen and faithful. Now, what we're facing here and have been over the past 100 years is a fulfillment of Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Just take those three chapters and just read through them and then compare what those statements tell you with what has been going on from World War I, World War II, and the 40 wars between World War II and about 1970, including Vietnam and the numerous wars and rumors of wars that you have heard and are hearing right now. And that's exactly what the Messiah told us. He said you'll enter a period of time of nothing but wars and rumors of wars. And at the same time, the prophet Jeremiah said that they will be preaching peace, peace, when there is no peace. And constantly on the news, we're talking about peace talks between Israel and the Palestinians, and peace talks between the North Koreans and their surrounding neighbors, and peace talks, and peace we're trying to bring to Iraq and Afghanistan. And they're constantly talking about peace and peace in Africa, which are constantly warring with one another and have been. Now, the Messiah said, don't worry about that. All of those things must come to pass. But it's one of those hallmarks. It's one of those signs that you'll be watching leading up to the second coming. Now, keep in mind that Jesus said when the second coming occurs, people will be marrying and giving in marriage. People will get up in the morning. They'll brush their teeth, comb their hair, eat their breakfast, get in the car, and be driving to work, commuting to work. That life will be going on just like it was in the days of Noah. And then the flood came and took them all away, suddenly. The parable of the 10 virgins tells us the same story. The second coming comes without any warning, without any foreknowledge, without any major signs. Everything that goes on in the world will just be just as normal as it can be. You see, you're living in a period of war and rumors of war, and it has so jaded us today that the coming war with Venezuela and Iran are just, well, so what's the big deal? The world has been at war since 1914. There have been continuous wars from that day to this. So when we read the book of Revelation and we see the three wars and the seven last plagues, you're living in that period of time right now and you don't recognize it. You don't see the inevitable culmination of all of these events, this new world order, these 10 kings, the collapse of the world's economy to create chaos. And then out of the chaos, the banks and the government will come to you and say, okay, now look. Here in America, to give you an illustration, we're in hock up to our eyebrows. People have mortgages on their houses and cars and one thing or another. Now, when the economy collapses, these people will be faced with losing everything. When the government comes to them and says, look, what we need is to trade in this green money and this gold and silver, that's what our problem is. We need a new monetary system. And so here's what we're proposing. This new monetary system, the reason that we have to change this to a debit card, you know, we're going to go to a cashless society, the ultimate destruction of any last vestiges of freedom or independence that you have is going to be this cashless society. And when this monetary collapse comes, everybody in the world is going to be in the same boat. So when they come to us and say, we need to give you the mark of the beast, they're not going to tell you we're giving you the mark of the beast. They're going to tell you, we're going to give you a debit card. We're going to help you save your home. We're going to help you keep your job. We're just here to help. We're from the government. We're here to help you. So take this number in your right hand and in your forehead, and everything's going to be fine. And it'll be so logical. It'll be for a good cause, to prevent identity theft. You ever notice a government always comes up with a neat reason why you should do this? See, they make this proposal, which is really a proposal to take control of you and take control of your property. And they point out to you, well, you know, if we don't do this, well, then some bad guy's going to come over here and take this away from you. That's what they did with money. See, they came to you and they said, look, I've got all these bad guys over here that are going to rob you. Put your money in the bank. Write checks. Use credit cards. So when Americans, and I suspect that you Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders and Western Europeans are all in the same boat, here in the same international forecaster that we're reading here this week, we find that the German economy now has taken a big hit because American consumers are not buying like they were in the third and fourth quarters of last year. See, our buying patterns are tapering off, and that's because we're about tapped out. And this international forecaster, by the way, I ought to give you a name and address. I subscribe because it's probably the most comprehensive of the underground newsletters, put out by Bob Chapman, Robert Chapman. Comes out four, sometimes five times a month. It's weekly, every Saturday. I get this over the internet. Just comes right in over the computer. And this week's edition, I'll give you the pages here. It's 33 pages. And I've covered about five pages so far. We're talking about, I just gave you the Douglas story here. Anyway, you can subscribe. It's $129.95 a year. Well worth it. I mean, if you stop and figure, it's always over 30 pages. But if you took 30 times 52, you're going to get 1,560 pages of news and editorial comment as it relates to economics and government politics, the society as a whole. 1,560 pages. And it's for $130. Let's just take 130 divided by 1,500. That's about 8 cents a page. 8 cents a page from the material that you get. So let's see what we're paying here. This week's report's 30 pages times 0.08 is $2.40 a week to get this kind of a report. And it'll keep you abreast of what's going on around the world. It keeps you abreast of what's not being told on CBS and ABC. Now, I was watching Bob Schieffer the other night on CBS, and they've got a segment on the news, really a neat segment. And that's where they go out and you vote. They give you three options, and then you can call CBS on the web and you can vote and decide what you want for the coming week, next Friday. Well, this past Friday, they had a story on there about an old man. He's 105 years old, and he runs a clothing company. He's a shirt designer, Western shirt designer, 105 years old. Started to work when William Howard Taft was president back in 1912. Hell of a nice story. Okay, but my point is, so what? You see, that story is called news on CBS. It doesn't even equate to pablum. Hell, babies can eat better than that. It was a neat story, and I enjoyed listening to it, but it doesn't have anything to do with news. It doesn't have anything to do with Matthew 24 or the Ten Commandments or the prophets Isaiah, Ezekiel, or Jeremiah, or the book of Revelation, or the statements by Jesus of Nazareth to watch world events and pay attention to what's going on around you. Because when I come back, all hell's going to break loose, and you ought to be ready for it. You ought to be one of those wise virgins. I don't see very many Americans doing that. Going on here, buried very deeply in the supplemental Pentagon budget is $35 million for echelon operations in Yorkshire, England, which has been spying on you since 1985. First, it was telephones, then faxes, then money wire transfers, and now it includes all the electronic communications. And this should have been an issue long ago, and that's probably why the recent National Security Agency spying came to be an issue, so that the elitists could continue to cover their echelon operation. We bet you didn't even know that another $700 million has been allocated to the expansion of the National Security Agency operations in Augusta, Georgia, and in Hawaii, so they can better spy upon you by way of echelon. The present NSA scandal is to see if the executive office can in fact assume dictatorial power. They want a stamp of approval to spy on you and to control you. Now, Congress does not even read this legislation. There was a piece on Frontline the other day. So let me recommend Frontline and Earmark. So if you were to just call PBS and tell them that you'd like to order a tape, PBS, I want to order a tape on Frontline, and then tell them you want the Earmark story, E-A-R-M-A-R-K, Earmark. And what these earmarks are is payoffs by the White House. For instance, CAFTA, C-A-F-T-A, the Central America Trade Treaty. It wasn't going to pass. It was a bad piece of legislation. It was bad for America. It's bad for the Central Americans. It's bad for Central American governments. But it's good for multinational corporations. It's good for Queen Elizabeth. It's wonderful for Halliburton, multinational corporations. It's just the greatest thing since sliced white bread for the Committee of 300, who, by the way, wanted it passed. So President Bush got on telephone, you know, he and his staff, and they started buttonholing congressional members. And they paid them with earmarks. It's bribery, but it's done a little differently. It's called lobbying. See, here in America, we call bribery lobbying. that's a legal activity if it's lobbying. If it's bribery, that's illegal. So we pay bribes, but we don't do it in the conventional way. So we have to do it in a special way. So we have a special methodology for bribery here in this country. They're called earmarks. So the president said, look, we got a, you know, he called you up and you're a representative, say in Pennsylvania or Florida or New York, and you're representing your constituents there. And the president calls you up and says, hey, listen, Bob, we want you to vote for CAFTA. And Bob says, well, you know, that's a piece of trash. You know that that's bad for America. And you know it's bad for trade. And it's bad for Central Americans. It's bad for everybody. And the president says, okay, so it's bad for everybody. But listen, Bob, you're running for election, you know, every 2 years. And the election's coming up in 2006. And we have a transportation bill. And if you'll vote for CAFTA, you can have whatever you want. See, I'm the president of the United States, and I'll sign that bill. And we'll give you a $231 million bridge for 10 or 15 of your constituents that goes nowhere in Alaska or wherever you want to build it. That's the way that game is played. Now, the last time I bought a tape from Frontline, I think it was about $35, as I recall. And I want to tell you that this will be about the best $35. If you're a registered voter, it'll be about the best $35 bill you've ever spent. Because, you know, I used to work in the legislature up in Idaho, and I was an unpaid lobbyist, but I was up there lobbying representatives for Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewife. And I worked with the legislature, and I became a non-voter. I wouldn't waste my time going down to vote. And I want to remind you that Jesus of Nazareth is not a Democrat. And when he comes back, he's not running for election. And he's not even going to ask you if you approve of his methodologies or his governmental programs. Because I don't think he's going to give a rat's rectum what you think. Now, that's just my personal opinion. But I think you're going to like this Frontline story because it's an expose as to how Congress works with the president to pass these acts like the Patriot Act. It's a payoff. And these representatives and senators have sold their soul to Satan himself. I mean, these guys are as corrupt as corruption can get. Now, there's a couple of exceptions. I'm not going to paint everybody in Congress with that brush. I think that Ron Paul down in Texas is probably a pretty straight shooting guy. And this guy, Murtha, up in Pennsylvania, he's probably a pretty straight shooting guy. And there's probably a few others that are straight shooters. You know, there was a lady in Congress. Her name was Helen Chenoweth. I knew her personally. Well, hell, I still know her personally, but she was in Congress for 6 years. And Steve Sims, you know. And these people, once they get to Washington and they see the filth and perversion that goes on, they get out. Honest people don't stay in Congress. You can't send an honest person to Congress any more than you can put a good apple into a barrel of rotten apples and expect the good apple to make the rotten apples good. The rotten apples will make the good apple go bad. But you're not going to send a righteous man or woman to Congress and leave them there for any period of time and expect them not to be tainted by that process. So when you see a congressman or a representative, I think Steve Sims spent one term in the Senate, maybe two. Helen spent three terms in the House and said that's it. Now, Ron Paul was in, then he got out, and then he got back in again. I think that he's the only, he and a couple others, are about the only voices of reason, logic, and common sense left in that legislative body. Just thought I'd share that with you. So keep in mind, then, that these earmarks, then, are bribes, and you can get the story from a PBS, a Frontline. It's about $35. I don't get paid anything for it. I just want to suggest to you that you educate yourself. It'll be a story that'll shock you. If it doesn't shock you, then you don't have any shock left in you. Congress doesn't even read the legislation. Those senators and representatives that voted for the Patriot Act never read it. And a couple of three of them say on the Frontline interview, well, we don't have time to read it. Well, let me tell you, you know, if I was sitting in the Congress, and I was given the Patriot Act and given 3 hours to read it, I think I would tell my leadership in the Republican or the Democratic side, until I've read every word of this act, I'm going to vote no. I'm not going to approve anything that I haven't read. It may be a wonderful piece of legislation. I got to tell you a little story over here. Rusty Barlow was a representative from Pocatello in the Idaho House of Representatives. We were working on some legislation. It was the, I forgot now exactly whether it was seat belts or compulsory insurance legislation, something on that order, you know. And so we had brought in over 100 witnesses. I mean, Joe Sixpack, truck driving, Sally Housewife, citizens, registered voters to testify before the committee. And I think it was over the seatbelt law. And we testified we didn't want that seatbelt law enacted in Idaho. So the insurance companies, they had a lobbying organization out of San Francisco. I think it was called the I kind of forgot, but they sent two lobbyists up from San Francisco to testify before the Transportation Committee there in Idaho, and they testified, and they're just two of them, neither one of them from Idaho, neither one of them registered voters, put on a hell of a presentation. I mean, they had charts and graphs, and they had all kinds of neat stuff. And so then came our turn, and Bob Hallstrom and I and a couple others, and Jim Hill and Claude Potts. And we had 100 witnesses, all of us registered voters and all of us taxpayers and all of us opposed to the legislation. And in fact, there was so many of us there, we had to go into the auditorium for the meeting. And we got into the auditorium, and the committee chairman said, "Well, Gordon, how many people are going to testify to what you just testified to?" And I said, "All of us. You're all opposed to it." So here's 100 plus voters opposed to it, and two non-voters with the insurance companies. They came in to testify concerning the seatbelt law. And when it was reported out of committee, it was reported out 7-2 in favor of passage. The people that testified against it were 105-2 against it. Now, I went to Rusty Barlow, complained, and he said, "Well, we got a deal with the governor, and the governor said that he would enact our education bill if we would vote for his seatbelt law." And so it was a trade-off, boys and girls, and that's the way the legislative process works. It's a trade-off. Those kinds of legislative deals are made behind closed doors. They don't have anything to do with you and I as registered voters. It's already a done deal. It's already made in the governor's office. Now, that's the way democracy works. So when I found that out, I said, "Well, I think I'll just quit it." Remember, that's Frontline. Frontline, about $35, and the story you want is on earmarks. Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right there, and we'll take it up right here next time, talking about economic meltdown coming with Bob Chapman and the International Forecaster, right here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. All right, let me give you a reminder. You've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.